We're joined live in studio by Paul Reid, the Chief Executive of the Health Service Executive. Paul Reid, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This time last week, we had one case of coronavirus in the Republic of Ireland. Today, we have 19 cases. Has the HSE projected forward and done a modelling exercise to try and ascertain how many people could be infected with this virus going forward?
Well, just to state again, we are actually at the point where we expect that we would be right now in the containment phase. And in case I don't get the opportunity later, can I just again restate the call to arms to the public when we're in this phase right now, that the most important thing they can do is firstly visit our site, hse.ie, and carry out the cleanliness, coughing, sneezing, etiquette, and touching, not touching hands, face, etc., or touching their face with their hands, etc. Just in terms of the modelling, that's a piece of work that's being led by the National Public Health Emergency Team. That's still currently in progress. And obviously what we're doing in that process is looking at the evidence. Thankfully, we've beginning to get more evidence across different countries from China, Italy, Germany, France, and even the UK. And that will strongly inform the next phase as we potentially move from a containment phase, which is all about prevention, towards a mitigation phase, where you're largely dealing with the spread of the virus and the disease into the community. With less tracing capability. But the phase we're in right now, if I can just state, it is the containment phase, it is the prevention, and we are putting together very significant plans. My team have been working on this since January. They're working throughout the weekend. I'll be joining them again shortly. And those plans are important and the most appropriate plans for this phase. I'm happy to set them out.
Okay, we can talk more about those later, but I just want to ask you about that figure that's on the Business Post newspaper today, which suggests that up to 1.9 million people in this country could become infected. Is that in line with your expectations?
Well, I read a piece this morning from Susan Mitchell, and Susan Mitchell's a very respected journalist and health correspondent. And the piece that how we're building our evidence is based on the ECDC and WHO, the European Centre for Disease Control, and the World Health Organization. And as I mentioned, the public health team are leading on that. There is a range of experiences that we're beginning to see emerging. And if you take Susan's article, I think she talks about 40% of the population. And there's ranges you're seeing from 30 to 50%, and indeed some less. And they're very big, significant differences in terms of impact. So we're working through that right now. But just to say, in terms of all of that, the number of people that are impacted, we do know, and the experience is well clear, the evidence is clear, 80% of the people who do contract the virus remain well. We are dealing with a 15 to 20% more critical, indeed, a percentage of mortality.
But I just wanted to I suppose, provide as accurate information as we can. Are authorities here expecting that this virus could affect up to 40% of the population here?
Well, I think the modelling work that is being done is expected to be completed next week, and that's an important piece for us. But again,
but you're not disputing those figures that are in the Business Post today.
I can't right now dispute the Susan's piece that she's done. But what I have to say is, and restate, we have to conclude the piece because this evidence is changing by the day all across. And thankfully, the phase that we're in is giving us the opportunity to build that evidence, build the science, and more appropriately, build the plans to address any surge that we will get.
Okay, but if we take it that those figures could be accurate and you're not disputing them at the moment, then the health service potentially is preparing for a massive onslaught, isn't it?
Well, let me set out exactly what we're preparing for and very significant plans being put in place. Right now, this containment phase, which you expect to last for a period of time, what we have done is, firstly, every acute hospital system has a surge plan in place. That will involve prioritisation of work that goes on in each hospital. Along with that, we are looking at all of our high dependency units, post-operative theatre beds, resuscitation units, how we maximise them across the hospital system. We're also looking at the private hospital capacity in terms of ICU beds. And as I mentioned during the week, we have put a €20 billion investment in an extra 25 ICU beds, and we're ramping up the capacity of the matter. But in terms of this phase, and indeed any other modelling for the next phase, it is about doing things differently. And a lot of what we will be doing now will be relieving the pressure on the acute system. So to give two very brief examples, the National Ambulance Service now are running a very significant operation by remote testing in people's homes for the virus, following a call from our public health officials through our HSE Live site and number there. And that's a very important process, because in the last few days, they've dealt with over 300 people in their homes. And you may have seen recently down in Lahinch, where the National Ambulance Service established a remote testing unit in an old guard station. And again, almost 50 people tested there. So it is about doing things differently.
Okay, but we know from the experience in Italy and in China that around 10% of cases, sometimes higher, people require intensive care. I mean, do you expect to be in a situation where if this virus escalates rapidly, that you could run out of acute ICU beds and specialist equipment like ventilators?
Well, I take my role as CEO of the HSE very seriously. And the best that I can do and our public health officials can do is communicate with the public and set out on the actions that they take now are really very important. And why I say that is as follows, because this relates to the modelling. Depending on how the surge hits, so there's some modelling that says you can get up to 50% within a 3-week period. And I think Susan was touching on that on her article. The actions that we are taking now are about trying to have the, first of all, the impact reduced, and secondly, to have it spread out over a longer period of time. So you don't have that immediate massive
impact. But it's important, if you want people to take those actions, to spell out the potential consequences for them if they don't take those actions. And what I'm asking you is, if people don't take those actions, are you looking at a scenario where you might run out of intensive care beds and you might run out of respirators and ventilators?
And the way I describe our response plan right now would be kind of threefold. Firstly, the number of actions that I just set out to you. Secondly, which is doing things very differently. And we have a very agile, supportive and responsive staff and healthcare professionals all across the country. And again, I want to thank them for what they've done in the last few weeks. Thirdly, then, in terms of national emergency response, you're up to a different scale. And that's why the Cabinet Committee on has been established to look at this. And I'm in with the Cabinet Committee tomorrow. And that's where you're really relying on a whole set of state agencies and bodies in terms of responsiveness. But we're not there at that phase. And the best way we can avoid getting to such a phase is complete the actions we're doing right now. And indeed, calling on the public for, you know, I've heard it described this morning quite rightly as kind of national solidarity. And that's the phase we want to stay in.
All right. Last night, new advice was issued to healthcare workers who've had close contact with a confirmed case. And they may now continue to work if they're not displaying symptoms and if they are deemed to be essential workers. I mean, have we reached a point now where we can't really afford to lose doctors and nurses from the system? Is that why this advice has been issued?
Yeah, well, again, and that's why I say that this is all about taking the appropriate actions at each point in time. Those actions wouldn't have been appropriate earlier on. They are appropriate now, because the clinical risk that we have to manage the balance between the clinical risk, keeping the system going and ensuring all our staff are safe. And let me reassure, we want to make sure our staff are safe, make sure the public are safe, make sure patients in our hospital are safe. And as part of this process, we're balancing the clinical risk and the capacity to keep the system functioning.
Will patients then be informed before they're treated by a health professional who was in contact with a confirmed case?
All our protocols are, you've seen throughout the week, any time that we are aware, we act very swiftly and very quickly in terms of the number of people, both patients and others that we've made contact with this week has been quite phenomenal. And that's the approach that we're continuing with, but making the traceability and making the advice and contact.
But if a doctor or a nurse is now back on the ward under these new protocols that have been introduced last night, will a patient be informed before they're treated by that person that, look, you're about to be treated by a health professional who was in contact with a confirmed case?
Well, look, all of the protocols which you just set out are being discussed right now quite locally with the two hospitals that it applies to, which is Cork and Limerick. And they're working through right now between with staff, patients and trade unions indeed, etc.
So that decision hasn't been taken yet, is that right?
That they're working through all of that right now.
Okay, what does it mean for Cork, for example? Because you announced last week that 60 staff at CUH were going into isolation. Does this new protocol now mean that some of those staff will not now be isolated?
Well, just to say to you, it has been over 60. It's closer to 100, actually.
Closer to 100
in Cork. That's the number of staff being impacted. And you couldn't sustain that kind of model going forward in terms of balancing the clinical risk. And we will make sure that's the most appropriate assessment. It'll be occupational health doctors making an assessment. And it will be ensuring that we have full public safety. We're looking after our staff and we're balancing the clinical risk and keeping the system functioning well. So it will mean a change in approach in terms of Cork to support them getting staff in the right places.
That's to keep the hospital functioning. So are those people, those 100 people, or close to 100 people, as you say, some of those people who are not displaying symptoms now, will they be coming back to work? Is that the
approach? Our approach is, yes. Some of those people who are not symptomatic, but they will be, and can I reassure everybody, they will be tested on a regular basis, clinically assessed on a regular basis, probably up to twice a day by an occupational health doctor. So this is all about the appropriate actions as we move through the appropriate phase, giving the public reassurance, giving our patients reassurance.
Okay. Now, there will, of course, be a knock-on effect because I know Cork University Hospital has had to reschedule outpatient appointments. What can you say to people in relation to, I suppose, the backlog that will arise there now?
Well, as I've said repeatedly this week, this is unprecedented territory for us in terms of this COVID-19 virus. It's unprecedented because it's novel and we're only learning about it as we go along. It's unprecedented in terms of the scale and level of attack that happens very quickly once it gets into the community. And it's unprecedented in terms of the actions that we're having to take. So I would urge the public again. And I think we've had a great response. I've had a great response from the public. I've had a great response from corporate industry, all willing to help and get behind us.
Okay. That's okay. Can I ask you about that? Because we're being asked at the moment not to shake hands with people, to wash our hands, to stand 2 metres away, maintain social distancing. And all of that seems very logical in terms of where we are now. But how does that tally then with the advice that we can go ahead with something like the St. Patrick's Day Parade when you could have maybe 500,000 people in this city alone standing in very close quarters, jammed into pubs together afterwards? I mean, how do you balance both of those two things, where on the one hand you're saying don't do it and on the other hand you're saying go ahead with this event?
First of all, I'd like to acknowledge that there is a lot of people out there in the public having a great debate whether the St. Patrick's Day Parade should happen or whether it shouldn't. I think we need to stand back and look at it in a much more comprehensive perspective than that. It is about our approach to mass gatherings in general, because whether the St. Patrick's Day Parade happens or doesn't happen, we still will have concentrated numbers of people in different settings. So the National Public Health Emergency Team, again, and thankfully I think the public have respected that this process is being led by public health doctors and professions. They are working through recommendations in terms of mass gatherings, and that will be a more comprehensive approach, and I think it will move it on from just the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Have you been given an additional budget to try and deal with the crisis that you're now facing?
Well, again, can I state, as CEO of the HSE, I will take every action I need to take in terms of protecting the public. I've had all the support I've needed throughout this week, whether it's from government level, department, etc. And I will take the appropriate steps. I want to reassure the public, I won't take any short steps in terms of what's needed. We will do all the right things that's required.
And does that include maybe considering asking retired health professionals to come back, stopping retirements at the moment? Does it include recruitment?
It'll include a range of initiatives. We will recruit where we need all of the public health professionals. We will most likely bring back some retired health workers to maximise our capacity throughout all of this process. So we'll be looking at a range of initiatives. And I have to say, the response we've got has been phenomenal.
All right. Paul Reid, Chief Executive of the Health Service Executive, thank you for talking to us today.